was drawn to politics back in, as you say, a really long time ago, at another time of budget cuts. And I could see that, as so often happens, the people who were suffering the most were women and children, the sick, the poor, the elderly. The people who had the least ability to defend themselves were getting kicked in the shins and taking the brunt of the cuts, while those who have access to funds were able to hire lobbyists and defend themselves. And that drew me to politics in the first place.
How does Maine compare to other states in protecting and ensuring women's rights?
You know, we've done a remarkable job here in Maine. It is a nonpartisan issue, largely, here. We have just faced, once again, this session, some really, we felt, bad bills. But they were defeated with a lot of work on our part and on the part of all of our colleagues at Planned Parenthood and the Family Planning Association and ACLU of Maine. So Maine stands out for the moment as protecting women's rights. What I begin to worry about at this point is the steady drumbeat of really bad laws adopted in other states and what that means for Maine when 36 or more states have adopted something that is bad, that it's just a lot harder to fight against when you're saying we're now an outlier. Mm-hmm. So that's my little worries.
You said that this issue is a nonpartisan issue. How is that different in Maine than in other states?
I think we're watching in some places where it has become incredibly partisan, Texas being the most recent, where Senator Wendy Davis so famously filibustered, but ultimately the law that she had fought was adopted by the majority, which was a Republican majority, and working with a governor who were able to maneuver the parliamentary procedure so that ultimately they succeeded in adopting that law. We're seeing in many places it's a partisan issue, unfortunately, but that has not, for the most part, been the case here in Maine.
Why do you think that is?
That's a very good question. I think Maine still prides itself on its independence. We are fortunate here that some of the strongest advocates of a woman's right to make her own reproductive decisions have been Republicans, including former Representatives Sherry and David Huber, who were very active in the founding of the Family Planning Association of Maine. Each of them served in the House of Representatives as a Republican member from Falmouth, but they believed, Sherry still strongly believed in that right. And that has been a tradition. I think we still value our moderate Republicans, and they still value their independence.
Now, you're saying that Republicans in Maine are generally more moderate. And with everything going on in Texas, I know a lot of people from other states are feeling that their Republican legislators will try to do something similar, push something forward like this. Do you think that is going to be an issue in Maine?
Well, I'm delighted that the bills that were defeated failed. They were, make no mistake, they were inappropriate and very serious bills that we were concerned could potentially pass. They have failed for this 2-year legislative session. You're not allowed to bring the same bills back in the second session. So we have a little break here, but there's every reason to believe that we will see more concerning bills in early in 2015.
More specifically, what does Maine Women's Lobby do to protect women's reproductive rights?
We are unique in Maine in that we have a full-time lobbyist who is in the halls of the State House advocating for a wide range of issues that women are concerned about. And the history is kind of interesting, so I'll tell it if you don't mind. In 1977, the United Nations declared it to be the International Year of the Woman. And a conference was organized in celebration in Houston, Texas, and a delegation of Maine women went down to participate. And they came back really excited, really energized, wanting to do something for their fellow women and girls in Maine. And they decided to secure funding for what were then called battered women's shelters. So they secured a sponsor, worked the bill, everybody seemed to be in support, everything was going swimmingly. But wouldn't you know, at the end of the legislative session, when all was said and done, there was no additional funding for battered women's shelters. So they went to some of the people who they thought had supported them and said, what happened? And were told, when push comes to shove, and it was late in the legislative session, you weren't here. And those who were here got their funding. So they vowed that they would never let that happen again, and they raised enough money in $2 memberships to form the Maine Women's Lobby and hire a lobbyist for the 1979 legislative session, and they got the funding, and we've had a presence in the State House ever since.
Now, when going back a little bit, you said you'll think that these sorts of laws might try to be pushed forward in 2015, and how do you think Mainers, what would you tell Mainers who want to get involved in that, in either making sure that doesn't happen or does happen, but specifically doesn't happen?
It's never too soon to speak up. Now, as I said, we have a little bit of a break before they are likely to be considered again. But it's election time is a really great time to speak with the people who want to be your elected representative and tell them what issues you care about. So we're fortunate in Maine where we really do have a very open legislature. It's very common, especially here in the urban areas, to have someone come knock on your door, ring your bell, and ask you what you care about. And so that's a really terrific time to talk to your elected representatives. We'll have a gubernatorial election in 2014, and so that's a really terrific time to talk to the candidates who are asking for your vote and ask them where they stand on these issues. Even if you're not yet 18 and voting, you can be involved in campaigns. You can speak up. We live in a state where it's still very possible to make your voice heard with your elected representatives. And there's an old saying in Augusta that five is a flood. Hearing from five people is a flood of contact. So, you know, never doubt that you and your friends and your colleagues can make a difference by speaking up.
Now, this isn't a completely state-controlled thing. How do you think the Affordable Care Act will affect or not affect reproductive rights in Maine and the accessibility to health care?
I'm not the world's greatest expert on the Affordable Care Act. There are a series of forums taking place this summer to help inform people about them. But one of the meaningful impacts that it has on women is that you are not asked to pay higher rates for insurance just because you're female. That's important. It covers contraception, which is part of health care. It covers a wide range of reproductive-related health care. So having access to health care is one of the most pivotal ways that we guard our health. And it's our feeling that contraception and reproductive-related health care is health care. End of story.
And I know some people have said that this is paying people somehow to use the contraception. What do you have to say to that?
That just doesn't make any sense. It's absurd. And we wouldn't have that discussion if men were the people who could get pregnant. It's just an absurd thought.
We've been talking a lot about men and women. What is the Maine Women's Lobby doing to help ensure reproductive health care specifically for trans people or gender variant people?
Well, we have advocated for health care for everyone and just everyone. We all benefit when people have health care. When people don't, as we all know by now, they leave off taking care of themselves until forced to address it, end up going in the emergency room, and it becomes that much more expensive for all of us. So we're advocates of healthcare for everybody.
How do reproductive rights affect the average Mainer? You were just talking about how it's important that we all have access to healthcare.
Well, the ability to decide whether and when, and if so, how many, and how often to have children is the most fundamental decision in a woman's life. It affects everything else. How can you earn a living, support yourself, keep your head above water financially, control your own life if you're not in control of whether or not you have children and when. So the people who engage in slut shaming or, mm-hmm. you know, then say, well, you know, we're paying you to have sex, which was Rush Limbaugh. It's an absurd mm-hmm. thought. Seem to conveniently forget that it takes two. or sex that produces babies takes two.
Yes.
So, there's a lot of blaming and shaming and attitude toward women. But let's remember that reproduction requires a male and a female.
Now, we were having a discussion writing guest questions, and someone said, why does this discussion regarding most of the time women or anyone with a functioning uterus, this discussion regarding that healthcare always seem to be a lightning rod topic? Like, it's such a big deal to talk about people's bodies or how they work, or that it needs to have so many laws dealing with it. Why do you think it is a lightning rod topic?
I obviously don't have all the answers. I have some theories. And one is, it's fun to talk about sex, and people like to talk about things that involve sex. It's also that it's a little bit more easily cast as a black and white issue. It's relatively easy to understand. And so it's easier to bring up and discuss than more complicated issues. The state budget has an incredible impact on your life, but it's really complicated to talk about. And so it doesn't get the sound bites. I think the media have something to do with it. They stir it up. And one of my goals is to help both the media and our elected representatives understand that while reproductive issues are really, really important, they're not the only issue that women care about. There are many more. And then finally, there's a theory by a guy, I can't remember his name, Thomas Frank, who wrote a book called What's the Matter with Kansas? And his theory was that social issues are being used by one particular political party to gin up their supporters, get them excited, rally the troops, and frankly distract them from the fact that they are being punished and they are on the losing end of the economic decisions being made by that very same party.
So I would like to remind our listeners that this is a call-in show. Our number is 780-4909. That's 780-4909. And joining us now, we have Lauren Groust.
Lauren Groust graduated with a BA in Sociology and Women's Studies and later obtained an MA in Psychology and Counseling with a concentration in Sexual Orientation. Currently, she works as the Clinical Counseling Director for Planned Parenthood of Northern New England and provides counseling and psychotherapy in her own private practice. Welcome.
Hi, thanks.
Thanks for being on the show. So we've been discussing a lot of things, specifically things going on in Maine. So I would like to ask about, we know that there's been some debate or discussion about the zoning of protesters outside of the Portland clinic, Planned Parenthood clinic. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Sure, yeah. So the Planned Parenthood Health Center in Portland is located on Congress Street, right on the corner of Congress and Elm Street. And we've been there for almost 2 years now. And when we moved into that space, shortly thereafter, there started to be protesters who would come and line the sidewalks and talk to patients and hold signs and talk to passersby. And it's sort of grown to the point where they're there every Saturday morning and now every Friday and Saturday morning. So And so we have been put in the position to hire an off-duty police officer to be there on the days that the protesters are there to ensure patient safety. And so we and our neighbors in that area and other Portland residents have gone to the Portland City Council and asked them to consider enacting a patient safety zone, which would make a no advocacy speech area within like 35 feet or so of the entrance to the health center. So that means that the protesters would need to relocate to an area outside of that zone, and the reason we're doing that is or pursuing that is really because our patients have to walk through that and are experiencing some intimidation and harassment while they're trying to access their health care, which is constitutionally protected, as is free speech. But when it becomes intimidating and harassing and potentially preventing people from accessing healthcare, then it becomes problematic. So we're just asking essentially that the protesters conduct their activity outside of a sort of a safety zone so that our patients can access.
Now, when you're talking to people who want access to healthcare, how do you talk to people about trying to walk through protesters of their health care? Is there anything do you talk to people about it? Or
we do. When we have patients who are scheduled to come in on a Friday or Saturday morning, we always have to warn them that they might see protesters there. And we have volunteer greeters who are some really amazing volunteers who stand outside with their pink vests on and make our patients and other passersby feel safe and comfortable there and have a friendly face there. So we tell our patients to look out for the greeters. And we've been actually collecting patient stories for a number of months, too, just to sort of really understand what the impact is on the patients who are walking through the door.
So back to the barrier, I'm assuming this isn't just a problem with the clinic in Portland. Have there been other cases like that before where the barriers have had to be enacted because of protesters, or is this just kind of a local issue? Or
yeah, this is something that health centers around the country have pursued when protest activity has gotten in the way of patients being able to access services. So Burlington, Vermont, that's also Planned Parenthood of Northern New England, we're all part of the same affiliate. We just had a patient safety zone passed in Burlington several months ago. There's one in Boston that's been enacted and other health centers across the country. So it tends to sort of go up the court system. So typically when a patient safety zone is enacted, there's a legal challenge to that, and then it goes up to a higher court to make a decision about whether it's legal or constitutional. So we're sort of anticipating that would happen in this case as well. But in the appeals court that the Massachusetts and Burlington and Maine courts feed into, they've actually already looked at this and declared the patient safety zone constitutional there. So we're pretty confident that this would be the same.
We know that many people turned up to a recent town council meeting concerning this potential buffer zone for patients. And we were asking our other guest, Eliza Townsend, about why people seem to think this is such a big issue, or why it is such a big issue. So we're wondering if you have any thoughts on that.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just, it's really frustrating when patients who are just accessing healthcare services that are legal healthcare services are put in a position where they're feeling intimidated and harassed and uncomfortable doing so. I think it makes a lot of people mad, and it makes people question why Planned Parenthood, why this particular healthcare service. And it leads back to the roads of, like, who are we serving and what do people think about why people access Planned Parenthood services, who gets to access services and who doesn't. It really, when you start digging into it, I think there are a lot of underlying beliefs and values that people have about who deserves what in our culture and who gets to, who feels entitled to tell other people what they can and can't do for what reason. So.
What are you doing to make Planned Parenthood seem less like a political landmine and like more of a clinic for the incoming patients and such?
Yeah, well, you know, the actual health center is we, like I said, we moved into the new health center almost 2 years ago, and we completely remodeled it. So it looks, it doesn't necessarily look like what you would expect a family planning health center to look like. Mm-hmm. So it's really, there are a lot of like bright colors in there, and we had artwork commissioned just for that space. And it's just, you know, it's a relaxing and calm and sort of modern space. So, you know, that's our health center, and our primary mission is to provide healthcare services. But we also have an advocacy sort of arm of the organization, because we know that what we do, the kinds of services that we provide, have been politicized. And in order to protect access for people to those services, we need to be advocating for, in public policy, for these services. So we keep that out of the actual health center, but, you know, we do have patients who are both, you know, they might be grassroots advocates of ours and patients. We have some people who come in who just want their health care, and that's all they want, and that's totally fine with us. So people kind of get to make the choice about how they want to engage with us.
Maine is a rural state. Are there enough providers in Maine to ensure reproductive rights and access to Maine's rural residents? And this is a question I think would be good for both of you.
Yeah, I think it's a tough question. I think that from what we see people traveling from pretty far distances, specifically to access abortion services with us. So when it comes to abortion services, I think that there are not very many providers in the state. And some states only have one provider in their entire state. Some states don't have any providers in their state. So, yeah, it's definitely an issue, because you have to think about, you know, how much does it cost to get the procedure? How much does it cost if you have to travel, if you have to potentially stay overnight? There's all kinds of complications that come into play when people have to travel a distance.
I agree. I have worries about having access both to contraceptive services and to abortion services. That said, there are providers of each in, as I'm aware of, as far north as Skowhegan and Bangor. So maybe not specifically, I'm aware of the Mabel Wadsworth Women's Health Center in Bangor.
Yep.
But still, Bangor is a good long day's drive for someone from northern Maine. So that's a limitation.
Mm-hmm. Just as a reminder, this is a call-in show, so feel free to call in. Our number is 780-4909. Once again, 780-4909.
Now, we asked Eliza about this earlier. How do you think the Affordable Health Care Act will or will not affect organizations like Planned Parenthood?
I think at this point, it's hard to tell exactly. Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot that's still being worked out with what this is actually going to look like and what it means for providers and for patients. So I think there are discussions that are ongoing, but I know that Planned Parenthood nationally and locally is at the table having these discussions with the people who are sort of crafting what the Affordable Care Act looks like. And, you know, we have a strong position that reproductive health care, sexual health care is basic health care. For a lot of people, they might only go to Planned Parenthood. They might not have any other health care provider. So, you know, considering that, it really is important, I think, that reproductive health care providers are at the table and considered, you know, basic, fundamental health care providers.
So switching the topic a little bit, what is sex positivity? And it seems to be a big element of your healthcare. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's a good question. And I think it's something that people can get sort of confused about what that means. And from our perspective, what it means is that, you know, sexuality is a basic part of being a human being. And so being sex positive means operating from that belief or that assumption. So it means being able to talk about sex and sexuality at age-appropriate levels, you know, from birth to death. Mm-hmm. It means being able to acknowledge that people make different kinds of decisions about their sexual behavior, their sexual identities, and really creating space for all of that diversity and not making judgments about which expressions or identities are okay and which aren't. So really, it's about having an open conversation and valuing the conversation about sex and sexuality.
Now, we know that sex positivity We know that sex positivity seems to be a big element of your healthcare right now. How are reproductive debates affecting that? And also with that, you mentioned that a part of sex positivity is recognizing diversity. And we recently passed equal marriage law in Maine, and they're sort of related in that. So how, again, how are reproductive debates affecting sex positivity? Because it's not a very positive debate, isn't very positive.
Yeah, I think that's true. It's been, I think historically it's been really difficult to have really open conversations about reproductive health issues and reproductive choice, because it's sort of been framed in this, like, you're either on one side or the other side, and people feel kind of boxed in by the sort of the arguments or the viewpoints on either side. And so it prevents us from really having open discussion about the complexities of what women face when they have an unintended pregnancy and are considering sort of how to move forward with that. So, you know, I think at this point we're really pushing to move the conversation about this from having a sort of constricted political debate mm-hmm. to really recognizing that, you know, nobody knows what it's like to stand in a particular woman's shoes, that she has her own experience and her own reasons and her own values. And it's not fair of anyone to tell her what she should or shouldn't do in that kind of situation. So it's really about valuing women's experiences and really advocating for women to have their own voice in situations like this.
We will be moving to break very soon, so I would like to remind our listeners that this is a call-in show. Our number is 780-4909. That's 780-4909. And we're here today discussing reproductive rights with our current guests, Eliza Townsend, who is the Executive Director of Maine Women's Lobby, and we have Lauren Grouse, Clinical Counseling Director at Planned Parenthood Northeast, New England. So just wanted to remind our listeners of what they're listening to.
I was going to jump in for a minute and say, in regards to your last question, Maine has embraced marriage for everyone. And mm-hmm. so I think the debate is changing, and it relates back to the idea of positivity, in that we're a lot less uncomfortable talking about sex or acknowledging that people have differences and people come in all shapes, sizes, and orientations. Mm-hmm. So the world is changing.
Yeah. Yes, thankfully.
All right, so we're Blunt Youth Radio, and we're going into break. We'll talk to you in a few minutes.
Thank you. listening to WMPG and W281AC Gorham, Portland. The weather tonight is going to be clear with the low around 54. And then tomorrow it's going to be sunny, high near 74. And then it's going to be sunny all week. So, all right. And here we go.
Hello, and you're listening. We're back, and you are listening to Blunt Youth Radio. I'm Olivia Bradstreet.
And I'm Kate Hull.
And tonight we're talking with Lauren Grouse from Planned Parenthood here in Maine. We're talking to Eliza Townsend, who's the executive director of Maine Women's Lobby. And with us on the phone, we have Robin Mandel.
After studying women's and gender studies in college and working with people in a sexual assault center and talking people through crises, Robin Mandel joined Scarlet Teen, a sexual health and education resource for teens. Through Scarlet Teen as volunteer executive director, they continue to talk about and advocate for reproductive rights.
Thank you for being on the show, Robin. And
well, thank you for having me.
And before we get you all started on questions, I would like to remind our listeners again that we are talking about reproductive rights and that this is a call-in show. Our number is 780-4909. That's 780-4909. Thank you again for being on the show, Robin.
Well, thank you.
So to start off, when talking to people about abortion, what fears or ideas do you most often have to dispel? Launch right into
it. I'm sorry, could you repeat that question one more time?
Definitely. When talking to people about abortion, what fears or ideas do you most often have to dispel?
When talking to young people, I would say the biggest fears, the biggest blocks and obstacles are how am I going to get it done and who's going to know about it and how am I going to do it without my parents knowing. And for some people, they're afraid to tell their parents or their guardians or their close family members. And for some people, they can't tell their parents or guardians because it's not safe for them to do so. So I think that's the biggest fear.
Now, what do you know what minors' rights are in regards to reproductive health care?
I'm chuckling a little bit here because they're so terribly, terribly complicated. I went and looked them up this morning, and I said, I cannot possibly remember all of this. You're based in Maine there, and
yes.
In Maine, any minor can get an abortion for any reason without getting a parent's consent and without telling their parent. Not all states are like that. Some states require that the parent be told.
Mm-hmm.
Some states require that the parent be told and that the parent give permission. There are other loopholes. For example, in some states, notification and consent are not necessary if the abortion was as a result of a sexual assault. Some states, it varies by age. There's an excellent breakdown of all of this for people living in the United States, actually, at another organization called Sex Etc. So if people are wanting to know what they need to do in their state, they can go look it up at Sex Etc., sexect.org, and they have a really helpful breakdown of that there. But it's super complicated.
So, moving back a little bit towards Scarlet Teen, what is the goal of Scarlet Teen? Like, what does the website provide for youth?
We provide sex and relationship education. We do that in a really, really broad range of ways. We have several direct services, such as our message boards and our texting service, and our live chat service where people can come ask questions either in public or in private. We have hundreds, if not thousands, of articles and advice columns
mm-hmm.
that people can go to for education about anything from reproductive rights to contraceptive options to what to do in a relationship, to how to talk about safer sex, mm-hmm. to how to deal with sexual assault. So it really, really runs the gamut. Sexual education is a pretty broad topic for us.
So how important is sexual education to teenagers? I mean, there are different kind of theories on it across the United States about how much education somebody should have or not have. Whether like just kind of avoiding the topic is a better way to go, or having in-depth discussions about it with young people.
Well, yes, there's certainly a lot of differences, certainly across the states, in terms of what schools actually provide. What I'm hearing from young people is that they want more education, mm-hmm. they want more details, mm-hmm. and they want to know more than the basics of how pregnancy happens. That's not enough for them. That leaves young people more confused than anything else. And again, we talked before about abortion and the variance in state laws, and the state laws really, really vary. Everything from mandatory education to each school board gets to decide what they teach and when, and everything in between. Did I answer your question properly? I can rephrase if you like.
Sure, definitely. That was perfect.
Now, going back to you were saying that Maine has pretty open laws for youth about access to abortion. Eliza, do you think, as we've talked about before, with all, you know, this is a topic that's always coming up, but it keeps coming up again and again with especially things going on in Texas recently. Do you think that's something that'll be changed, or people will try to change soon?
Thank you for raising that question. We actually faced a bill this year that would have changed Maine's parental consent laws. We have in place an adult involvement law, mm-hmm. so it is, in fact, a little more complicated than available at any time. And that law has been in place since 1989, so that if a young woman cannot approach her parents, she can turn to a guardian or another adult family member. She could get consent from a judge or from an approved counselor, somebody with a medical background, and that's an area that Lauren can speak more directly to. So it's a little more structured in terms of making sure that there is somebody involved who is an adult. That debate is a bit of a perennial debate. Because these are emotional issues, not surprisingly.
Thank you for clarifying that. Unfortunately, I had looked up incorrect information, and I apologize for misleading people.
It's okay.
It's all right. And I was wondering, this is a question for all three of you, what are your personal views, if you would share them, on youth having access to reproductive health care? Do you think people should be allowed to openly, or have limited access, or what are your opinions?
Well, I guess I can speak from my experience, my professional experience, and sort of where I land on this because of that. So before I was a mental health counselor, I was a sexuality educator for Planned Parenthood. So I spent a lot of years just doing that. And I still do some sexual violence prevention work with Boys to Men, and which is an awesome local organization if people don't know about it. But I really think that young people need and deserve honest conversation about sex and sexuality and relationships, period. They need adults who are willing to have those conversations, who make themselves comfortable enough to have those conversations, because I think that's what you guys really want and need from us. You know, you're living your lives and you're trying to figure things out and you're having relationships and making decisions. And so I think you need access to good information so that you can make the best decisions that you can for yourselves, and support from us when, you know, things don't play out the way that you would have liked, or when things do play out the right way and you're excited about it. I think, you know, we need to have your backs a little bit more than we have, and not look at it solely from a political perspective and really be grounded in what is going to be the best for young people as you guys are just trying to figure stuff out for yourselves.
Robin, thoughts on this question?
Oh, my goodness. I don't think I could have said that better myself. I think what I would add would be that I really want to see there being support for young people, for you, from multiple perspectives, from multiple sides, so where you can actually choose whether you want to talk to a teacher or you want to talk to a supportive doctor or other healthcare provider, or you want to talk to a supportive faith leader. So you don't actually have to just go to the one person in your life who you think might actually listen to you, where there are multiple people who are going to feel free and comfortable to give you your options and to tell you what's out there and give you that emotional support.
So do any of you know if there will be a place and time where this will not, or do you want, or I imagine you'd want there to be, but do you think this will ever be a non-hot issue? This will be an issue that is no longer an issue?
If I could speak to that,
yes.
And this certainly isn't a meant to be a doomsday statement, but I will just say that Scarlatine has been around for 15 years. And we have just as much traffic, if not more, than we ever did, which tells me that this isn't going to stop being a hot-button issue for a long time.
Mm-hmm. Going back to your website, what do young people ask the most about? What are they most curious about?
Oh, my goodness. Right now, I would say we get a lot of questions about relationships. Mm-hmm. You know, what do I do in this situation? How do I handle this? How do we make sexual decisions together? My partner wants this, and I don't want to give it to them, and I don't know what to do. And then the other big one right now is pregnancy risks and really not feeling sure about how pregnancy works and what sexual activities do lead to pregnancy, which ones aren't likely to, and which ones mm-hmm. really, really, really are not. And if I could just speak very quickly, because it's very near and dear to my heart, mm-hmm. pregnancy is definitely a huge, huge issue, and getting pregnant can definitely change your life, or yeah. having to make decisions about what option you want to choose if you do get pregnant. But sexually transmitted infections are just as important, if not more. Mm-hmm. And what we're seeing a lot of is people feeling like pregnancy is very, very important and very, very crucial and not thinking about the STI risks. Mm-hmm. And I would really like to see, when we talk about reproductive health, to also talk about sexual health in general mm-hmm. and to make those hand in hand go together.
Right, because part of reproductive health is not just limited to, you know, sexual activity or abortion. There are a lot of other topics, I think, sometimes that tend to kind of get left in the dust because of...
There's simple things like, protective contraception can yeah. help limit STI risk. But I know that, I'm pretty sure you would know, Lauren, that a large portion of what Planned Parenthood does is simple cancer screenings and
yeah.
things like that, basic.
What's
I think everything yeah. should be basic of healthcare, but
yeah.
things that don't really have to do with that at all.
What is the statistic about how much like abortion is like actually like part of it? Isn't it very small percent of your services are actually abortion related?
It is. You know, I don't know off the top of my head. I mm-hmm. think it's like 2 or 3% mm-hmm. of our services are abortion related services. So most of what we end up doing is we do well woman visits, which are just like annual exams where we do cancer screenings, breast cancer. We do cervical cancer screenings, breast cancer screenings, you know, check blood pressure and cholesterol and just sort of basic preventive health care, as well as doing STI screening, sexually transmitted infection screening and treatment, helping people with birth control, which may or may not be taking for contraceptive reasons. Sometimes people use birth control for other things, for endometriosis, which is a sort of medical issue, and the lining of the uterus starts growing in other places, and it's really painful. So mm-hmm. some people use birth control pills to treat that. So we do a broad array of things, and we also really we focus on also screening people around safety in their relationships as well. So, you know, often people will come in and they might want to pick a birth control method or change their birth control method. And we start talking to them and they might say something like, well, I can't take birth control pills because my boyfriend will, you know, he'll take them from me. Or it's called reproductive coercion. So, you know, we do screening for things like that, and we help people support people get the other services they might need for that, and also help them think about, like, okay, so if birth control pills don't work for you, let's think about what else can work. Because as you can probably imagine, in a scenario like that, getting pregnant would probably not be a good thing for that mm-hmm. person mm-hmm. or either of those people. So, you know, all of these issues kind of cross over into each other. So it's pretty rare that somebody comes in and they have, like, a really straightforward, just, you know, single issue or problem that they want addressed. We, you know, we also do screening for depression and anxiety and mm-hmm. all kinds of stuff.
Now, this brings us to a question we had for Eliza, which was, how are reproductive rights, or clearly they are linked to, Maine Women's Lobby's core issues, healthcare, violence protection, and civil rights? Do you think these things are completely linked?
Absolutely. And, you know, what's so interesting about this discussion, when you asked whether these issues will ever go away, mm-hmm. So much of what we're discussing is really about power of one kind or another. Mm-hmm. The power to make your own decisions and therefore shape your life in the way that you want it to be, or the power, as Lauren just described, to control somebody's life by controlling their reproductive choices and options, or when we think about politics. Really, these issues are they're not just about sex or about reproduction. They're about who gets to decide. They're mm-hmm. about power, both at the personal level, at the state, federal, the global level. They're, you know, who's in charge. and that's why they're central to our work, because what we're about is allowing women to make their own decisions and run and have thriving, positive, happy lives based on being in charge of their own lives.
Now, Robin, how do you and do you talk to the teens who come to Scarlet Teen for advice about things like reproductive coercion and relationship abuse like that?
A lot of it is relationship education and talking about people valuing themselves and having autonomy over their bodies and being allowed to make decisions. And a lot of it is about, I would say, reminding people that even if you really love and care about somebody, it doesn't necessarily mean that the type of relationship you have with them right now is the best relationship for both of you. It doesn't necessarily mean that being in a relationship is the best thing for either one of you at this time, or you might be better off being friends. That's a big part of it, is really just saying, you know, you can love and care about somebody and still not be a good fit for them to be in a relationship, or they aren't a good fit for you as a partner. So that's a big part of how we approach a lot of relationship dynamics. And it doesn't necessarily always mean that the relationship needs to end, although certainly when we get into the areas of reproductive coercion, unless it's more of a matter of the partner just not knowing that that's not okay, mm-hmm. you know, just not having the education themselves. And where, you know, they may be able to work it out, but usually when you're getting into reproductive coercion, you're also getting into other types mm-hmm. of abusive behavior.
Now,
so we'll also educate about abusive behaviors in general.
Yes, and I assume that all of you would like better sexual education in schools. Do you think that a part of the sort of the talk that parents have with their kids. One should just be better, but do you think that a part of it should be talking about consent and relationships and stuff like relationship abuse? Do you think that's something that really should be talked about? I know that that's something that isn't talked about at all, is the actual relation part of these topics.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think, and as far as like sex ed in schools go, I think that absolutely sex ed, comprehensive sexuality education should be just a part of the health curriculum in schools or integrated into schools in some way. And as Robin mentioned earlier, I also think that there need to be other places aside from school where young people can get information and have conversations. Mm-hmm. So, you know, a classroom is not always the optimal environment to have an in-depth conversation about stuff. Because
and some people don't even go to school even.
Right.
And are still minors. So.
Exactly. So I would hope that, you know, that parents would be also, I think that the idea of the talk needs to be tossed out the window, because ideally it really should be, you know, sort of integrated into just what parents and their kids talk about and not feel like it's the separate weird thing. I think that's one of the major disservices that we do around sex and sexuality in our culture, is sort of put it in a little box and sort of treat it like it's this different thing that's not connected to anything else. We need to take it out of the box and like weave it back in to where it really is, where it really exists in our lives, in our everyday lives and at school and all over the place.
And in a healthy relationship between parent and child, those things, those conversations are going to be coming up over time. Ideally, you're building a relationship where anything is up for discussion and...
Exactly.
Both in your own behavior and in your day-to-day conversations, you're demonstrating those values to your kids.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And do you think that as a society we should do that? The same thing, but not just between parent and child, but as a society that we should move and strive towards having it just be a completely open discussion like that?
I think so. I mean, I think if you look at our culture right now, especially media and advertising and music and movies, I mean, sex is everywhere, right? But it's sort of used as a tool to sell things or to get people's attention. And so it tends to be really provocative and kind of stylized and fictionalized rather than being portrayed in a realistic kind of way. So you know, there is a lot of sex and sexuality in our culture, but it's sort of one really narrow view of what that could look like. So I would like to see that expanded and, you know, have, for example, like in TV shows or in movies, show a more realistic portrayal of how people negotiate consent with each other. You know, it's sort of like we see this portrayal of people like ripping their clothes off and, you know, never talking and like immediately having intercourse. And that's not that's not generally how it works in real life. So it would be nice if we could actually see like, what does this really look like when it's a healthy kind of, you know, a healthy consensual interaction.
So I think we are coming towards the end of our show. But thank you so much for being on it. We have Eliza Townsend, Lauren Groust, and Robin Mendel. Thank you guys so much for coming on.
I'm Olivia Bradstreet.
And I'm Kate Hull.
This has been Blunt Youth Radio discussing reproductive health. Next up is jazz.
WMPG is on the air thanks to listener donations and generous support from the University of Southern Maine. USM educates Maine's future artists, business people, engineers, healthcare professionals, lawyers, managers, public servants, scientists, and teachers. More information is available at usm.maine.edu.
Thank you for listening to the Planet. Hold that tiger, hold that tiger, hold that tiger.